5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, good evening, good evening. It is, what is it? It is Thursday, the 23rd of May already. And it'll be Christmas soon in many ways, so Merry Christmas, one and all. And it is the New Panic Room episode 144. So that's that. And I don't know what time it is. I think it's 9:34 Central Time or some such. depends where you are, because as Einstein said, time and space indeed are relative. So giving you the time really doesn't matter. So I guess that's it. It's time. Although time is an abstract concept developed by man to sort of just mark the passing of things, I guess. So it's no time. It's no time. And in the space, that is relative to other parts of the universe. So that's where we are. Anyway, speaking of things that are relative to other parts of the universe, here we go. Along to that, Xena, how are you this evening, Maria? With a yee-haw and a yippity-doo.
I know, yeah. Yeah, you know, I was, we were debating earlier today how to say the word, concrete, you know, cement. How do you say cement?
That is a common misconception. Concrete and cement, two completely different things, certainly. You know, in the grown up world, it depends where you are. So from where I'm from, it's cement. Yeah, where I am now, it's cement. That's my fun vehicle you got there, son. And Heyer. Heyer. I didn't know Heyer.
My Heyer.
Where I'm from, it's in fact, it's not even got the H. It's I'm getting my hair cut.
Yeah.
And it is literally, it's one syllable, no H, not three syllables. Really, 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 really. But I was torn. You know, I was thrown into that debate, and it made me obviously miss home a little bit, because obviously it's cement. The overriding consensus there? Was it cement or cement?
It looks like it's pretty half and half. It doesn't. I'm not seeing overall, like, you know. So I guess it does.
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, I was saying earlier, obviously, time and space are relative. Maybe cement and cement are relative to where
maybe.
You are.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
You go. So
you know, it's funny.
There's no right or wrong. It's funny, this Schrodinger's cat thing, you know, that's supposed to be some sort of really deep and bullshit. If you look at a cat in a box, it can physically, from a biological point of view, cannot be alive and dead at the same time. No matter what your perception is, it's one or the other. It doesn't matter. It is very, very egocentric of the human psyche to assume that simply because you're not observing. It's like the, you know, if a tree break falls down in the forest, does it make a noise?
It still makes a sound.
Of course it makes a fucking noise.
Yeah.
Because when you think noise is the vibration of airwaves, compression and decompression of airwaves, then yes, the physical manifestation of said tree hitting the ground or running through the air even, it is displacing things. It is moving the air And as such,
I'm with you.
It does make a sound. But this whole Schrodinger's cat thing, it doesn't matter whether you're observing it or not. If it's dead, and to be fair, if you lock a cat in a box for any time, it dies. I'm told, a friend told me when I was a small child and I didn't know what I was doing. I'm showing this cat, I'm the tree in the forest, I'm going to call bullshit, to be honest. Speaking of bullshit, and it's not often we, you know, obviously the show is we don't just cater for writers, you know, the normal people listen as well, but obviously a lot of wannabe writers, we've had a couple of interesting emails this past, yesterday, I had a bad day yesterday, and we're always polite and professional, and you know, do you guys give advances? Because I've got a really good book, you know, and da, 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 and that. And I reply, no, because you know, we're an independent publisher, therefore that means no advances, really, you know, because we've got no money.
Right.
I've spent it all on putting cats in boxes, to be honest with you. Very polite. And then I got another one. Said, are you sure about that? Because it's really good, it's really marketable. That attitude is not going to change my mind. The fact that he didn't even send a sample of it or even mention the title. You know, if you're gonna play the confident card, and it can be good, if you can back it up, it can be a good one. I got in one of my first anthologies just by being cocky. I sent my sub and said, right, I've got a perfect story for your anthology. The guy actually said after, I mean, it was published and everything, actually, when we did the book launch, and he said, you know, this guy got, he literally caught my attention just by being a cocky bastard. As it worked out, the story was, it backed it up. But so this guy, I still don't know. I mean, you know, coming back and saying, are you sure? I'm pretty sure that it's not something I lie about, and I am pretty sure that yes, I know what the company policy is, you know, because between me and Xtina, we own the company, so we kind of know these things, you know. So if you're gonna try and be clever, you know what I mean. And again, I'm not going to name names, but we have another issue with somebody trying to be clever. And there's an old saying, and it was actually my old biology teacher back in high school said, you know, that those of you that think you know everything are an irritation to those of us that do. So, you know, it is a wise word that I've stood by. You know, don't try and bullshit a bullshitter. Don't try and act clever when really, you know, you're up against some stiff competition, to be honest.
Especially when you're having one of those days. You were so funny yesterday. You're like, I've not had a great day, and you know, this is just getting me fired up. And I'm like,
unfortunately, if said person caught me on any other day, I would have been more magnanimous. But I was in a fighting mood. I was ready to bust some skulls. So it's like, brilliant. You bring it on. Yeah, I'm spoiling for a fight.
But I do love the way, you know, you're still so professional. It's actually dripping with, you know, professionalism. If you're smart enough to be able to...
I can tell someone the fuck off, but be very professional and polite about it. Yes.
Perfect.
It is an art form, but... but yeah, it was today. I have to say, has been a more mellow day. I've put in a good day of pounding the keyboards. I have. Why not? Got a fair bit done today, and there's always stuff to do. You know, I can't remember ever getting to a point where I've done everything now. You know, it's all done.
Yeah.
I think if I got to that point, I'd be terrified because it would mean there's nothing to do, you know.
Or you've forgotten something really important. You know, I've done that. And I'm like, oh, you know, today's going to be an easy day. And then I'm like, I forgot, you know.
That has happened. Usually at 2 in the morning, it you remember. And you wake up in a cold sweat, bolt upright in bed, think, shit, I didn't do that.
been there.
I think we all
survived. I survived day one of my son's the first day of summer vacation. Woohoo! I made it.
Whoa! Well done. I I don't have to face that till next Wednesday is my son's last day, because he's got finals next week, and my daughter is off Thursday. So as of Thursday, 11 weeks. 11 weeks. So, say go.
My son didn't have to take finals. I guess if you had a certain grade point average or something, and you hadn't missed any school,
you can be exempt. Yeah. But my son hasn't earned that right this year, so he's having to take. Last year he was exempt from a couple, but this year he's got to take them because his grades have slumped a little, a fair bit, but he's passed. You know, there's a couple of subjects that I've had to ride his ass and make just the threat of summer school has got him through them. So you do see it. Because the thing is, he can do it. It's just that he cannot be bothered. You know, there was one subject he was on 38%. I said, seriously, dude? And I think it was English. I said, fuck's sake, really? Hey, this is an embarrassment to me. If this got out amongst the writing community, that my son is getting, and all it was, he just hadn't bothered handing stuff. He'd even done most of it. Yes. He just hadn't bothered handing it in. And literally, I spoke to him. Next day, he handed it in. By the end of the week, he was on 85%. And literally, he didn't do any extra work. He just handed in what he'd done that he couldn't be bothered to hand in. But
makes
brilliant.
No sense, but the kids are like that. Yeah.
He's just, I don't know, he's just so laid back. He's horizontal, that boy. But having said that, you know, he can play. He plays the system. He knows he can piss about and da da da, and you know, and then just pull it out the last minute, get the grade at the end of the semester. Jobs are good. You know, I was the same. He's got that off me. I was the kid who used to do my homework on the bus on the way in. I was lucky. I've always tested well. I always did well in exams, so I could piss out and then cram for the exams and get good exam grades, which. In them days, what it was all, there was all this coursework bullshit. Literally, you do two years hard work and it all rode on your exams at the end of the year, at the end of the second year. And if you failed, you failed. If you didn't, you know, that was great. But I was lucky that I managed to test well, and so I could just pretty much toss it off for 2 years, which was nice.
Definitely.
So anyway, speaking of things, do we have a show? Have you organised a show for us this evening? Because I have no idea.
I was
even late for the preamble, and I got told off.
I know. I figured you just didn't want to talk to me for the full 15 minutes today.
To be fair, we were eating Pizza Hut pizza and chatting to my little girl, so that was much more entertaining, to be honest. So
there you go. I've talked to her, so I agree with you. I agree.
She's great.
We have an awesome show tonight. We have for our first segment, we have mystery writer J. Alexander Greenwood, and our second segment, we will have returning guest USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and number one contemporary best-selling romance author Willow Winters.
I think it is Willow that when we were on the show last time that actually gave rise to your famous quote. You see, what time period is your contemporary novel set in?
Oh my gosh! Possible,
that is going on your headstone. I will conspire with your boyfriend to make sure, as and when you die, that goes on your headstone for definite.
Thank you.
I think we should bring our first guest on. Why not?
We should. Mystery writer J. Alexander Greenwood.
Good evening. Hello.
I hear
Feel free to join in. Hello. I think maybe we bored them to death. I mean, it does
happen.
Maybe nodded off. So what? I guess we just make loud noises till it's just like.
He said he's speaking. Do you still have him on mute or something?
He's there. I've got the hello. Hello?
Jason!
Hello! Okay, let's have a seance. Oh, it says he's speaking, but we can't hear anything.
Yeah.
What is going on? But I tell you, it is an interesting thing. It's actually a project I'm working on at the moment. How's this for a terrific title? Are you ready for this? It's simulating all sky pseudo satellite images in open IFS CY40R1 using COSP and RTTOV version 12.1. What a gripper! Yeah. What a body shripper that's going to be!
Wow! Yeah, that's
I can't wait.
Hello. Well, isn't that funny? I have a fancy headset that would make me all special, and it doesn't work. So I had to plug in the handset. Isn't that lovely?
Oh no! Well, at least if it's Amazon, you can send it right back.
I am going to send it right back. My God! If you can't expect quality from China, I don't know what to expect.
Exactly. You know, if the little kid is in the sweatshop can't get it right, then who can?
Well, you know, what are we threatening their lives for, if not to, you know, a decent product?
Well, exactly. And it's funny, I mean, obviously, you know, the Trumpmeister General's got this trade war with China going. Has he not seen the Star Wars prequels? It was trade war that started that off. You know,
I recall that because somebody nudged me in the middle and I woke up.
Yeah, so, but I didn't. I think I slept through the whole thing, but... you know, how long before China are building a Death Star? You know, I'm thinking, but then again, obviously, it'll be made in China, so invariably they'll have to send it back on Amazon because it's not, the first one's not worked. So
you know, James, I'm old enough to remember when things said made in Japan on the bottom, you looked at them suspect.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, I'm older than that, actually. In the day, made in Hong Kong used to be the cheap and cheerful.
Oh, you're a little bit older than me then.
I am. It's made in Japan, and it was like, seriously, but now, I mean, Japan churn out some of the best, gadgetry. Some of the best stuff. Apparently, Japan are like 5 years ahead of us in, you know, electronic stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is scary. Which is very
Indeed.
Scary. Which means they probably have flying cars now, so I'm jealous.
Yes. Well, there's been a media blackout, so you don't get, you know, too upset about it. But it is coming your way. It's true.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, you know, there's a whole thing about flying cars. I mean, I'm living in Texas, and I'm not being racist here, but you know, you get these little old Asian ladies who can barely steer with the steering wheel, driving badly. And it's funny, none of the blinkers work ever. You know, and I'm sure they try. So imagine that, but in flying cars. I mean, no. Bad idea.
Yeah, you're on your own on that one.
People of the future, don't do that. So, Jay Alexander Greenwood is here to talk to us about Pilates Ghost, which is a ghost story about Pilates or...
Well, actually, you know, it could be a story about really svelte afterlife people, but actually it's more like Pilate, as in the guy who killed Christ, John. So the character is John Pilate, who's got the same pronunciation as Pontius Pilate.
Oh, there you go. Is he a distant relative at all?
Do not feel bad, because everyone says Pilates. And I've just given into it. That's my fault for trying to be clever by half, as they say. But this is about about Pilate's Ghost, which is one of six books in the John Pilate Mystery Series.
Oh.
I gotta say, I grew up in church, so I was there with you with the Pilate. I was like, that's Pilate's Ghost. So.
Thank you.
To be fair, when I first read it, I read Pirate, and I was all excited, to be honest. I was just thinking Pirate, so I love Pirate, so there.
Well, the first book was called Pilate's Cross, which is a pun, really, because it takes place in a town called Cross in Nebraska, and the tagline for the book was Pilate's Cross: washing your hands of murder isn't easy. Ha 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 ha. But nobody got that. It was all like, I don't understand. Was it an exercise class and what the thing and the thing and the other? And I'm just like, I I'm doing that thing with the eye roll and the shrug and the thing, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, okay, I give up. But you know what? I couldn't stop. So I thought, well, hey, it's the first book. Surely in the next five they'll catch on.
Well, maybe not, but you know, I mean, a couple of rules, you know, as a writer, I never dump down, and it's never a bad thing to make your readers think a little bit. You know, I love a book that has me every now and then just reaching for the ditch. Well, obviously reaching for my phone because I've got Merriam-Webster on there now. Don't ever dumb down. I like it if you get, because that's the thing. You open that debate, it's going to stick. People are going to remember that, and that's the good thing. So good on you.
Thank you. Thanks, James. I mean, I'm just being true to me, yeah, because that's one thing I fully believe in is I've never tried to write to fit into a genre. I've never tried to write to fit into a current trend. I just write what amuses me, and luckily, over the years, I've had a few people come along for the ride.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. Well, they say, you mean, write for yourself, and if you happen to entertain other people along the way, fair dues, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate you saying the word entertain, because to me, that's the height of it. If I can entertain people, my work is done. I don't view my work as high art. I don't view it as me trying to change the state of, you know, of the genre. Mm-hmm. I just want to entertain people. I typically find that the things that entertain me at least entertain a few people, and that's a great thing.
That's great. I mean, again, as writers, as creative people, if we, you know, I'm speaking for myself, you know, it takes a lot to keep me entertained. Xtina will tell you this. I am very ephemeral with my attention. Likewise, if I'm writing something and it ceases to entertain me, then that is time to pack up, because if I'm not feeling it, if I'm not entertained, then how can I expect other people to be? So it's kind of a good barometer. Although, as a result, you know, I've got a bunch of sort of half-finished books that will probably never be finished, because I just literally started off really good, but kind of towards the middle was a bit, you know, it's just not got my attention now, so I'll do something else.
That's always the hard part, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I've often thought about marketing a series of books where I highlight the good parts. And people can just go to those, and if they'll buy them, I don't care.
Yeah, or just I mean, I should put out the half books and just put a warning. It's a really good sort of 30,000 words. It's the first third of a novel. It's really, really good, but I stopped because it was boring me. But the bit that you get is fantastic, so buy it.
Yeah, I like.
I mean, between the three of us, how many of us have had a review where it's like, I really like the first third, and then I gave up, and so I'm going to go ahead and give you a 2-star review. And I'm like, oh my God, you know.
Well, yeah, could you just give me the stars based on the first bit? I mean, oh yeah, give you 5 on that.
Great idea.
There you go. That works for me.
I did see a debate on Facebook that was talking about Stephen King endings. You know, and how there's quite a number of Stephen King, you know, either books or movies that have just not lived up to the rest mm-hmm. of it. You know, I mean, it's like he just got to a point where he was tired of writing it, and okay, well, just bam, that's it. I mean, I felt that way with Under the Dome. I mean, that thing, I actually liked the book up until, you know, the end, where I was like, seriously?
It was a good book, yeah. The end was just like, seriously, dude?
You got bored.
Because,
I watched the television show, and after about 3 episodes, I kept calling it Under the Dumb.
The thing is, I mean, I enjoyed the book, apart from the end, but the TV show, mm-hmm. and suddenly they were out of the dome, which is like totally what?
That's
it's like the TV show, you're the last man on earth. And there was about four dozen of them at the end. Well, it's not. It's a bit of a... But with Under the Dome, because, again, because they stay true to the book to a certain extent. And then obviously thinking, well, you know, we need, you know, more seasons. I think they managed two seasons in the end. But we need more seasons. And we can't just keep going in the dome. So we have to get people out of it. So, and I was just like, how the hell have they got out? Because that was the whole thing with the book. You could not get out of the dome. And nobody left it. And suddenly they're out and they're wandering down the high street and doing a bit of shopping. And no. No, don't do that.
I didn't
that.
See the show. I just read the book, and I enjoyed the book. I did. The ending was kind of weird, but you know. And
it was a bit of a bit of a cop out ending. It was just something like he'd written himself. He got that far. I'm going to have to end it. Oh yeah, it's all good. I'm not spoiling it for people, but you know. And to be fair, anybody would get buy the book, read it, but just don't read the last chapter.
If there's a ding that King gets a lot, it's that his endings, right? Am I wrong about that, or is that the
no? A lot of his endings are even. I mean, It, which is like my second favorite King novel, the ending was, you know, to be fair, it didn't need it. I mean, I've said this before. You know, the characters were great, the story was great. It didn't even. You could have probably taken the It out of it, and it would have still been a brilliant coming of age novel, to be honest.
Yeah.
True.
You know, and the ending was for me it was just like, oh, it was a giant spider, great giant spider, wolf it there, well done, Steve. Was that the best you could do, really? And I know Steve's probably listening, but so I'd you know, well, thank you for listening.
If he is listening, I'll tell you, my favorite King book, and I'm probably in the minority, is The Dead Zone. I love that book.
Oh,
and I like the movie.
Oh yes, yeah. Yeah, great movie. The movie was pretty true to the book as well. And I mean, we got Christopher Walken and Charlie Sheen in it. I mean, not Charlie Sheen, Martin Sheen, sorry.
Yeah.
What a combination. I mean, yeah, I watched it again quite recently. It's on my free movie package. And so I was flicking through on a rainy day. Yeah, I'm going to watch that again. And it is still, I saw it at the movie theatre when it came out. And it is still as good now as it was back then.
It's a haunting film, it really is.
Beautifully,
it's really
yes. Yeah. I've said the other King book I really enjoyed, in fact, on this debate, it seems about somebody slate, it was Firestarter. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's better than the movie was a bit, yeah, but the book was phenomenal. It had me hooked. I sat and read that cover to cover 3 hours non-stop. I don't think I even got up to go to the toilet.
That was
I literally couldn't put it down.
Yeah, I saw the movie as well, and I didn't hate it. You know, I definitely didn't hate it, but you know, I loved the book and the part. What was that? What did they call that? The bad people, the experiment. I forget what they called
The shop. The shop.
Yes.
They turn up in several. King in the mist, it was the shop who were responsible for breaking through the dimensions, and the shop does pop up a few times actually. In the book they explored that a lot more, and they explored the father's telepathic ability to manipulate people a lot more. You know, it's done better. But yeah, that book, I seriously could not put that book down. I was a student at the time, so I skipped a few lectures and sat and just read Firestarter.
You know how we have this really cool segues? James is like amazing at doing these amazing segues, and I suck at it. So I was, you know, like a couple of that. I know.
Yeah,
like,
Jim, you know, she's not lying. She does suck at it. Yeah, absolutely.
It never ever asked me to tell a joke. I'll just say that, because I'll tell the punchline first, and then I'll get mad because you know you don't get it or something. But
my very 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 best friend at school, Joe. he would tell a joke and he would always forget the punchline. So you'd get this great build-up, and he'd heard it, you know, on the TV or whatever, or his dad had told it. His dad was a hell of a guy. He always had a funny story. And he'd get to the – literally, and he just like – so I know the beginnings, or, you know, a lot of jokes from him, but it's just a punchline. Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like me. That's amazing. Yeah. I actually said that for a huge reason, and then, like, you know, normal fashion, exing the fashion, I have no reason. I don't remember why I brought it up.
Don't remember.
But anyway, Jason, I want to hear more about Pilates. See, I was going to say Pilates.
Pilates, please. Tell me about Pilates, thank you.
Yeah. Well, everybody, yeah, you work up a big sweat and your heart rate gets up. It's really great.
Yeah, oh,
excellent.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But I want to hear more about Pilate's Ghost. Do you have a reading for us?
I do have a reading, if that's all right, and I'll do my best with that. Just so you understand, just to set the stage, this is the third book in the series. I wanted to pick something that was a little more. So it's probably this Pilate's Ghost. The first book is Pilate's Cross. The next book is Pilate's Key. Then there's Pilate's Ghost. Then there's Pilate's Blood, Pilate's Seven, and Pilate's Rose. And I just say that Pilate's Ghost has been reviewed as the darkest book in the series. John Pilate, the lead character, who won't appear in this reading, by the way, is kind of an accidental hero type of guy. He's not a professional detective. He's not particularly smart. He's just this dude who gets thrown into situations. So, this being the third book, you don't have to read all three, you know, all the books in the series to get into it. But I just kind of wanted to set the table a little bit for you. But this is the opening to Pilate's Ghost, which is, again, the kind of the darkest book in this crime, thriller, action, suspense series. So does that sound okay?
Yes, sir. It's all yours.
All right. Here we go. The man's beard itched. Each hair of his beard erupted from his chin, warring with its neighbors, poking one another like cranky infants forced to nap on an old hooked rug. Perspiration added to each follicle's furor, and the man's overall misery. Driving 10 hours straight in the rusty old Datsun truck had been torture, especially without air conditioning. Hot air blasting from the engine, the only way to keep the engine from redlining in the sweltering southern air, baked him behind the wheel. His rank sweat glued him to the ripped vinyl seat. The tinny AM radio aggravated his headache. He missed his own car, a luxury SUV with leather seats, air conditioning so cold you could chill a nice Napa Valley varietal in the front seat. 6-disc CD changer, satellite radio, and a smoke-glass sunroof. His face itched as if he wore a beard made of fire ants. He gritted his teeth and resisted the urge to punch the Datsun's dashboard. He blinked at the surface of Route 1, a reliably monotonous hell of concrete and homogeneity. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw kids in a minivan pointing and laughing at his ramshackle ride. The cruel insouciance of the kids mocking him aside, the man had picked the ramshackle truck because it would blend in. Nevertheless, it was a shit ride, and he was hot, and enough was enough. He found the old man in the restroom at the rest stop on the outskirts of the Everglades at 2 a.m. He parked the rusting gray Datsun in the parking lot beside a late-model Buick LeSabre. Inside, the old man was taking a crap with the stall door partially open. He had a gray comb-over and wore a blue shirt with pearly Western snaps. His jeans were pulled around cheap ostrich cowboy boots, sweat beaded on his forehead. "You stink, mister," he told the old cowboy through the half-open door. "I ate something bad down the road a ways. Sorry," he said. "I'll do a courtesy flush." He tugged the lever, the sound of the flush akin to a jet engine. "They do have some powerful plumbing here. I hope it don't suck my bunghole out my ass." The man's vision grew swimmy, his skin clammy. He walked over to the sink and turned on the tap. It was one of those faucets that gave water only as long as you pushed the button. Tough to wash your hands when you have to keep touching the damn faucet. He splashed lukewarm water on his face, soaking his irritating beard. He carefully avoided looking at himself in the polished metal mirror. The old cowboy grunted and farted in the stall. His stink flourished anew. Disgusted, it made the man angry. For weeks he had wallowed in the filth and stink of others. The man was tired of it. Sick, tired, and sick. It was hot and humid, and his entire skin crawled with a dried saltwater rash. He pondered leaving the cowboy, getting back in his mobile sauna, and making more distance. The old man's bowels moved again, a furious disgorgement that sent a new cloud of shit stink into the restroom, barreling into the man's nostrils, stinking up his thoughts. "Are you almost done in there, cowboy?" he asked, sighing. This wasn't any fun. "Hard to say," came the grunting reply. "Well, fuck it then." He pulled a hammer from his belt behind his back and wheeled around to the front of the stall, yanking the door wide. The cowboy threw his hands up to protect himself. "No, mister, please, no." "Give me your keys," he said, the hammer raised over his head. The cowboy fumbled in his pants pocket for the keys. His hand shook as he handed them over. "Just toss him over here, he said. I can't bear to be near your stink. Oh, okay, mister. The beads of sweat on his face seemed to grow in size. While he looked at the wall over the old man's head, avoiding his eyes, the cowboy fumbled and pulled out a stitched calfskin wallet with the initials MC on it and tossed it over. Please, mister, I got 3 grandkids, the cowboy pleaded. The man picked up the keys and wallet. In an aged but still transparent vinyl window was a photo that he presumed was of the aforementioned grandkids, 2 boys and a girl. He found 2 $20 bills and a $2 bill folded over 4 times in a corner of the wallet's bill envelope. He grunted and walked outside, the hammer behind his back. No cars, it appeared. He threw a switch inside himself. The cowboy struggled to rise from the toilet and pull up his pants. The man walked back inside, adrenaline accelerating. His mind achieved a sickening speed of purpose, a velocity that left his rational sense on the side of the road. Sorry about the grandkids, he said. He brought the hammer down repeatedly. The man staggered outside, covered in gore. He vomited behind the restroom. His mind decelerated. The man dragged the body by the cheap ostrich boots out to the Datsun. The ruined head left a greasy red trail from the restroom to the parking lot. He propped the body in the driver's seat of the despised Datsun. He covered the corpse in the truck interior with lighter fluid. He looked around, breathing heavily, his stomach roiling. Hurriedly, he stripped off his clothes and threw them, along with the hammer, in with the dead man. He hurried over to the cowboy's car, a virtual Rolls compared to the truck, and started it. Then he went back to the truck, flicked the lit match inside, and slammed the door. It erupted with a whoosh. He didn't stay to watch the man and truck burn. How far I've traveled, he thought. How terribly far. Tears worked from his eyes into his beard of ants. He scratched at the beard until it bled.
Wow, you can keep going. That was awesome. And well, you read it so good, too.
Well, thank you. It's a dark thing, and we've been having such fun tonight. I was almost like thinking, oh, geez, this is heavy. But, you know, it...
It is. It was...
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It sets it up. And the one thing I that's not conveyed in this excerpt is these stories are full of a lot of kind of flip dialogue. I had a really nice fellow writer kind of compared this character to Carl Hyacinth stuff in Florida. And
wow.
that was, which, not that it's that good, but it's just in that kind of vein where it's kind of a, there's kind of fun going on with it. So this one's pretty dark, and I just thought, you know, if anybody's looking for a series where a guy deals with, you know, both the light and the dark, this might be it for you.
Awesome. You know, I was wondering with a series, like how many books are in the series, did you say?
There's 6 and counting. I'm working on the 7th right now.
Now, did you know it was going to be serious when you started it?
Oh, hey, bless your heart. That's a great question. I mean, actually, no. I thought it'd be one and done. If you've got 1 second here, I can just tell you. The first book started out of something real. I took a job in Nebraska at a small town at a college, and a few weeks after I started, I was the PR marketing director, and I was the assistant to the president of this little school. And one day I show up at my desk, and there's this big, fat manila envelope, and it's got a Post-it note on it that says, we get questions on this every year or two. You might want to read up. I pull it out, and it's a whole murder file on something that happened at this college in 1951 or 2, where a professor went out of his mind. He didn't get tenure, so he went and assassinated the president and the dean and then killed himself.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so I took all that, and I made it into my own book, Pilots Crossed. And from there, it just seemed like, well, hey, let's keep going. This is kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have a really strong character, you know, somebody who you can see in several. I guess that's what I was wondering, because you know I was wondering if it was like you see it as a whole right away, or you know, like a bunch of different storylines, or you know, is it just the one? And
my grandfather had written 50 years worth of Westerns and historical fiction, and he had always instilled in me the discipline and understanding of writing, and I just finally got, you know, mature enough where I could sit down and actually get something finished. And yeah, so I appreciate the question, because once I got it done and people responded pretty well to it, I thought, mm-hmm. Well, this is fun, and it's a world you can build. I think I love the world building more than anything else.
Yeah.
If you want to know the truth, I enjoy that I've created this reality that John Pilot and his friends live in.
You know, I saw one of your books. It was the cover of it, I guess, was redone by Jason McIntyre.
Jason McIntyre, the brilliant Jason McIntyre.
I have read his Dovetail Cove series, and, you know, what you're talking about, building a world, that's, you know, I felt like it was, that's kind of like, you know, building a world, and I thought it was so cool how he had the different books with in the same world, and, you know, we'd finish with one book, and then, you know, the people would go to, you know, a diner, and I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's Tina from the diner, and I would be all excited about, you know, the different characters, and I love that whole world thing. Yeah, it's like you don't want to leave it, so if you have a good one, you know, by all means, stick to it, you know, and, you know, some people get done writing, and they just put that character up, and that's all you get, you know, and sometimes we're not ready to leave.
Well, you know, it's kind of a trap for me, though. I got to confess, because I'm so comfortable in this world. I don't want people to think, oh, it's boring. It's not. It's just, I've tried. Jason will tell you this. He and I are good friends, and I have tried very much to kind of break out of that. I've done short stories that have done okay that have been outside of this world, but actually writing a new novel that's maybe a one-off or something like that, it's funny because I get started and then all of a sudden I'll come back to it in a couple of days and I'll be like, well, where's John Pilot? Why isn't he in this book?
I love that. Yes, yes. Well, that's awesome that you say that instead of, you know, the other way around. And like, you know, I'm so tired of writing this. I'm, you know, and wanting out, but knowing that, you know, your fans want it to continue. So that's great when it's, you know, it's still exciting for you to write him.
It's exciting. It might be a tad easy, and I don't mean it like it's easy, but it's comfortable. So I do.
Yeah.
I have been challenged by many writer friends to go out of sight of that. But the good news is, it's like no matter how far I venture, I can always come home to him. You know, what if I do write something and it's not as well received or not as comfortable? I can always go back to Cross Township and Key West, Florida, where John Pilot hangs out.
That is awesome. I love that. Do you have any other? I mean, how many books do you think will be in the series, or do you have any idea?
I did decide a few years ago on a number, and my favorite number is 12, and I decided that probably 12 ought to do it. But I'm not in any hurry. I'm a relatively healthy middle-aged man. I think I can keep going. I mean, I'm 6 books in. I'll be 7 by the end of this year, basically. I think I can keep going a few more years, and there's other stuff. And, you know, my grandfather, who I mentioned previously, just last year, I recovered. He died about 15 years ago. I recovered a lost manuscript of his that never got published, and I got it whipped into shape, and there was a missing chapter. I filled in the blanks there, and I put it out myself last year, and it was a Western, and it was fun to write something completely different, like a Western, to go in there and not edit too much, because I respect my grandfather's voice too much, but just, you know, tweak it up, polish it, and then kind of fix that chapter that was missing, and that was a real blast.
It sounds like it. I always admire somebody who can create, you know, when I write, it's in this world, so I don't really have to, you know, fiddle too much with it, and so I think that's really awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. I hate to say this, but we're just about out of time for our first segment. And you did mention, though, that you're going to have another book out at the end of the year, so you have to promise to come back and see us.
I'd be honored. Did I run James off? He's fairly quiet.
No, I'm here. No, I had some technical issues at this end, so
okay.
I am back now. It must be
well, thank you.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it so very much. Thank you for inviting me. I'm very flattered to be asked, and you can bet when time comes and I've got something new, I'll give you a little nudge and see if I can come back.
Brilliant.
Awesome.
We would love to have you back. Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm not, no, you haven't bored me right yet. You're fairly enjoying getting things working at this end, but we're back on now. But no, thank you so much for joining us. I love the reading as well. That was brilliant.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. And if anybody wants more information, if you don't mind, I could just say go to pilotscross.com. That's pilatescross.com. Or just go to Amazon and look for J. Alexander Greenwood, which is a fancy way of saying Alex Greenwood. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jason.
Have a great
All
evening.
Right. Cheers, everybody.
Again.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And we will be right back after this.
Ba 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 Room Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
I'm dialing in on my phone. It's like a gas starts. I don't know what went wrong. There are sort of technical issues here, but it just all suddenly went horribly wrong. But hey, can you hear me all right?
I can. Yeah, definitely. You're there.
Good. So that was a jolly. It just flies by so quickly, doesn't it? I mean, you know, it's halfway through already, and you know, I'm ready for my bed. I didn't sleep.
But you get up at
like
the crack of birds. You don't get up so early. I was up at I think I rolled out of bed about 18 minutes after noon. So
seriously?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Seriously.
Right,
yeah.
I was awake about 3. And then watched every hour tick by until literally 10 to 6, and my alarm goes off at 6 because I have to get my eldest up and out of bed for school. But again, this time next week it'll be party time because I can stay up late. Next Friday morning I don't. But you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be awake at 10 to 6 again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I No, I think, you know, I'm a night owl, I guess, you know. We don't go to bed till 3, you know, sometimes 4, sometimes later, and so there's no a.m. hours for me when it comes to waking
up.
Yeah,
you sort of have an odd sort of nocturnal existence.
You know what? You almost every week you say you do that whole "What's New Pussycat" thing, and I have nothing.
Oh, I'm gonna do it now.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa! What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa!
Well, I wanted to say that.
What is new?
Help on Bookhead.
That was a segue. You said, I thought you said you were good at segues. That was brilliant.
Because I was excited about this one. We had a new audiobook. Hellbound Books had a new audiobook go live today. The Project by Adam Burnett.
How come I didn't know about it? Nobody tells me anything about it. That is fantastic. That's fantastic.
I don't know. It is. Every time. Yeah, it's almost like, you know, one of my babies, you know, because I had so much to do with this. So I feel like it's, you know, my baby.
They're all the audiobooks, your baby. We've got some, I mean, Pete, actually, which is one of mine, should be going live shortly. That was just sent off for review. That should be coming up shortly as well. The one I'm really, really looking forward to is The Children of Hydesville. Late... Jesse Stevenson, it's a weighty book. Shut up, bloody dog. Great book.
Yeah, takes place in the little town on the outskirts of where I grew up in upstate New York.
You knew the Fox sister's house, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been in it. Yeah, when I got that book to work on, and I saw the title of it, I was like, "There is no way it's the same Hydesville." And then when I read the blurb, and I was like, "Holy crap!" It was spooky. I actually had chills. I'm like, "There is just this is
oh,
really
yeah.
weird." Yeah.
Creepy
and. As a matter of fact, we're going to drive up to upstate New York sometime this summer. And I'm hoping we can, you know, pay a visit to the Fox sister's house. You know, I think
I'll get some pictures, take some pictures.
Definitely.
That's spooky. Yeah. That's really spooky. Yeah. But I said, I know you wrote, an afterpiece in the book, you know, and it was like, what are the odds
that would end up on
your desk of all people?
Exactly.
But yeah, it's freaky stuff. Freaky stuff. But yeah, all good. So, what's going on next? Of course, we've got a contemporary author, so you've got to promise me, you've got to ask the question.
What time period
is your contemporary novel set in, you know?
I'll be sure to ask that. Yes,
could
our
you?
Next draft is, yeah, definitely. Returning,
bring her on.
Before, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and number one contemporary best-selling romance author, Willow Winters. Woo!
Hello!
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
This is.
Hi.
We can hear you. Hello.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me on.
No, thank you. Thank you for being on. Thank you for coming.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
Thank you for coming back. I mean, to be fair, you should know better.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes. Yes.
Really.
And I am on the night owl variety. So this is my this is actually when I start writing. So my brain is on and I am ready to chit chat.
You are on fire. Well, you're kind of looking at my creative brain is sort of morning, funnily enough. So I'm on wind down now. I'm on wind down. Yeah, so I'm pretty mellow, I have to say, pretty mellow. To be fair, I'm normally tucked up in bed by now. I like to watch TV and fall asleep in bed. It's funny, I mean, like a movie is like watching a miniseries to me. It can take about five five sittings to get through a whole movie for the, with these days.
Oh, wow.
But, it's funny, I've been watching Chernobyl, the HBO miniseries, and it happens to me a lot. You know, I'm going to see it to the end, because it can't be much longer. And my eyes were going, I thought, right, okay, I give in. And I then got all excited, got me a cup of cocoa, and I'm big into double chocolate Oreos at the moment, and they're just like the best thing ever. So I've got my little mug of cocoa and my dark chocolate Oreos, and Chernobyl, flick it on, and literally there was 30 seconds left, and then it was the end credits.
Wow.
Oh, it's a bit of a
laugh. I'm enjoying that. We've actually seen the third episode twice now, because we watch it once together, and then we watch it with my son watched the third episode.
Absolutely gripping. I mean, it happened in our lifetime. I remember it. I remember it well. Happening, and just seeing, obviously seeing it dramatized like that, it was just, and it's so incredibly well done. Incredibly well done, you know.
I love the miners.
The nude miners.
I've got to check it out.
Yo, you should really. But again, obviously, I guess he's got a Western bias to it, but he exposes a lot of the stupid bureaucracy within, Soviet government at the time. It was still the Soviet Union at the time. And it was just mired in bureaucracy, and if it wasn't for a couple of, scientists who was like, to hell with it, and, we're going to stick our necks out, if we get shot, I think it would have been a much, much bigger disaster, because they only just managed to stop the core melting enough to get, if it hit the water table, it would have contaminated the water for like 50 million people. It would have rendered a whole region uninhabitable for thousands of years, and they managed to avert that. I mean, the people that sacrificed the lives as well was just unbelievable. Like the miners, I mean, they know. The miners know that it's a death mission. They know what's going to happen to them. They're just doing it to save. Had it happened here in America, obviously Donald Trump would have done it all single-handedly, naturally.
Oh, God. But, yeah, that, watching that and just knowing that this is not fiction, this is not made up, this happened, that to me. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, I remember it, but not, it wasn't, I was, how old was I back then? What was that? 86, I think? So I was, like, 12. So, it didn't have a huge impact on me at the time. And I'm kind of glad, because
I wasn't born yet. I was born in 89, so, I don't even think my mom was thinking about me yet, let alone anything else.
But
I'm the opposite again, though. If I turn something on, I can't fall asleep. I've been binge-watching Sons of Anarchy. I'd never seen it before. And a couple nights ago, I looked up. It was 5 a.m. I stayed up, wanted to watch another episode. My eyes were burning, and I was like, I just need to watch one more episode.
Yeah, I still have to watch the last season of that show. I stopped. I don't know why. I don't even know why. Mm-hmm. So, I need to get on with that.
Well, I'm on season 4. I'm only on season... I'm now on season 5. I think there's 7 altogether. So, we'll see. I don't know. I'm just addicted to it.
It's a good show. It is. Now, most people are like, totally Team Charlie, Hunnam, Jax, Team Jax. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, it's weird because I was always a fan of Tig. I love Tiggy. I do.
Really?
He's got this weirdness.
What's his name? Chips? Yeah. I like Chips. Uh-huh. I like I know. He's older, and I don't typically go for an older gentleman. But his storyline with Fiona, I'm a romantic. And, that storyline tugs my heartstrings a little bit. But I wouldn't say no to Jax. I'll say that.
he is pretty hot. There's something about and Kim Coates. That's the guy who plays Tig. He's got beautiful blue eyes, and I'm not even the sucker for blue eyes normally, But his are
and
very
he's
pure.
Funny. He has. He's
is.
A comic relief. He's got a good sense of humor. Yeah,
make
there's something
laugh.
About a guy who likes jokes. Yeah, exactly. If you can make me laugh. Yeah.
So you were here to talk to us about your book, A Single Glance. So tell us both more about it. Oh, and James wanted me to ask you, what time period is this set in? Your contemporary romance? Is this, you know?
Yeah. It is.
1842.
Yeah, right around then. No.
just
actually, this setting for these books is actually from two different places that I grew up and I kind of combined them. So I guess you could say that it's kind of set around, 15, 20 years ago, roughly. If I could, because it's back to the way that it was when I was there. And it has changed a lot since then. So that's what I would say, which is really good for some evidence since there's crime involved. But I do try to keep everything modern. There will never be an Alexa in any of my books, though. Because, you know, she's recording everything. All these crime guys, they would just be screwed and say, Alexa, don't listen to this conversation. Like, she's definitely listening.
Oh, she is. She is. It's pretty spooky.
It is. Exactly. So I can't write, like, today because Alexa exists and they would all be screwed. Yeah.
So tell us.
It's a scary thought, really, isn't it, when you think about it?
It really is, but you
that
know what?
Are
I was
being
listened
to.
It's they listen. It's not even just Alexa though, and the reason I actually have an Alexa, and I got one, just for Christmas. A friend gave it to me, but before that, I was just having a normal old conversation, not on my phone, I didn't have an Alexa. My computer was closed, and I said I needed to get something, and I turned on my computer. It was on Facebook, and I had ads for that item.
Smart TVs, my remote for my TV is a voice thing. A lot of them have it now. Instead of smart TVs, they are listening to you. We're just bugged. I mean, we are, and the ironic thing is, you know, we pay money for the, what are in effect bugs to bug our own homes. How stupid do you have to be? Somebody is a genius. Somebody has said, tell you what we're going to do. You know, we need to bug everybody's house, but we don't have to pay. Because when you think about it, you know, you've got your cell phone, you've got your iPad, you've got your computer, you've got your TV, you've got your Alexa, you've got your fucking fridge. There's people's fridges. They talk to, I've seen them. They say,
yeah.
Order the milk, and it will order the milk. In fact, you don't even have to tell it sometimes. It knows when you're running low on milk. Seriously, we need to go back to Amish times and have nothing electronic, you know?
You know, I still go with the whole, you know, one of these days the Terminator thing is going to come true and it's going to be rising machines. And,
it's happening now. You are that family with that refrigerator. The refrigerator rebels, and you run out of milk.
We have four of those Google Home things, and then the TV is like, you know, I sit down in front of the TV, and the Xbox turns on or whatever, and it'll say, you know, hi, Xtina. And, you know, because of the whole rise in machines and stuff, I'm really nice to them. And I wave back I thank Google. You know, I want her to think I'm on her side. Thank you, Google. You know,
I'm the same. I cash machine, you know, ATMs. Yeah. I always say thank you to the ATM. When it gives me money, I always say thank you.
I apologized to my Siri the other day. I like moved into a new neighborhood and it's huge. And there was an accident at the front entrance. And I knew that there was an exit at the back entrance, but I've just never gone there. And I was asking Siri. I said, "Could you help me get out of here?" And I was like, "It's a newer development, so it didn't have everything." And I yelled at it because I was literally lost in my own neighborhood for 10 minutes, which is embarrassing. It was so embarrassing. And as soon as I got out of the development, I said, "Siri, I'm sorry."
Oh, no.
I just felt like such of a jerk. I was like, "It's not your fault that I'm an idiot and I don't have any type of spatial awareness."
You know, I don't either. I would have been lost right along with you. I would have been. You know, I can be in the house and point the wrong way for, you know, going out of
the house. I got the thing with the key, you know, if we say we got the mall or even if we just got the supermarket, and it's this thing, it's a bit of a game now. It's like, where's Dad's car? Because I never know. I have to park up and go in the store. And in the 10 minutes I'm in the store, I've completely... And I've had the assumption, you know, like when you go to the mall, some sort, I'll even come out of the wrong door. You know, so like, and it's got several doors. And I mean, I can't ask, where's my car? And I'm totally out of the wrong door because I just forgot where my car... And now it's funny, my son, I mean, he's sort of nearly 17 now. You know, from a very, very young age, you know, he's going to make me like a steel trap because he had to. Otherwise, he'd have spent most of his childhood just walking around various parking lots looking for my car. I had a Tahoe for quite some time. But that died, and I got a Mustang, which is two opposite. Because it's a lower-down car. For 6 months, I would come out of somewhere looking for this fucking white Tahoe, wandering up and down the parking lot. Where the there's a car, because someone stole the car, and then remembering, not only was it a completely different car, but equally, I'd forgotten where I put it. And I also, you know, you get a point of reference, and I still do it. You think I'd know better at my age. And my point of reference, it's another car. And, of course, you come out and it's moved, doesn't it? So I was parked next to that yellow Jeep. Where's my bloody car? Where's the yellow Jeep? So somebody's stolen both cars. What are the
odds? That is some good comic relief right there. And two girls walk out from shopping. Right? Where did you park? Next to the yellow car. And there's no yellow cars out there. That would be freaking hysterical.
I love that. I think the guy with the yellow Jeep's going to be as pissed as me because somebody's nicked his car as well.
Oh, and that's the punchline. That's fabulous.
But you can get little gadgets now, like a GPS that just a little thing that you stick in your car and it will actually ping your car and it will actually take you direct. I need one of those badly. And as I get older, I need one to find my way to the toilet as well, so you know, I need loads of them. You just put them all around the house, various key points around the house.
Well, we'll get to this eventually. We should make more time on the, you know, anyway. Willow here has talked to us about her book, A Single Glance. I love this tagline. I knew she'd be a tempting, beautiful mistake, one I would make again and again, even if it cost me everything. I like that.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you like it. Yeah, and Dun's a good. It's definitely got some suspense to it. And there's a lot going on in this series. So, yeah, I'm in love with it.
Is this the first book in the series?
It is. Yeah, it's the first book in the series. It's called the Irresistible Attraction Trilogy. And so it's A Single Glance, A Single Touch is the third one, which I just sent off to my copy editor. And A Single Kiss is book two. And it's, a book about Jace Cross. He's one of the brothers in an Irish crime family, basically. They grew up in a rough area, really poor, and their older brother made a mistake. And because of his mistake, they kind of had to really fight to survive, and they realized how good they were at fighting and how good they were at creating fear and power and rising through the ranks, basically. So it's got like a kind of like an HBO series vein where, you know, there's a lot of suspense, there's violence, and a lot of working external factors. But it is obviously a romance.
Mm-hmm. And do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Oh, heck yes. Yes. Okay.
Yay!
Let's get on. I'm just going to read the prologue of the first book, which is in the heroine's perspective, and her name is Bethany. So here we go. I've learned to love the cold, to love the heat that comes after, to love his touch, whatever bit of it he'll give me. Only when we're in this room, though, outside of it, he's still my enemy, and I'll never forget that. But when I'm tied down and waiting for him to use me as he wishes, I live for these moments. The edge of the knife drags down my body, the blade running along my bare skin and taking the peach fuzz from every inch of me. It doesn't cause pain, but it leaves a sensitive trail that awakens every nerve ending it passes, making me feel alive, so so desperate and so conscious of how good it feels to long for something. The knife travels down my collarbone, carefully, meticulously, leaving a chill in the air that dares me to shiver as the sharp knife glides lower, down to the small mounds of my breast. It's so cold when he's not hovering over me. The icy bite of the air alone has never brought pleasure, but knowing what's to come, the draft is nearly an aphrodisiac. All the heat I need is buried between my legs, waiting for him to move the knife lower, bringing with it his hands, his breast, his lips. The desire stirs deep in my belly, then lower still. With my legs spread just slightly, my thighs remain touching at the very top, closest to my most bared asset. The temperature in the room is low, low enough to turn my nipples to hardened peaks. Sometimes he drags the tip of his knife up to the top of my nipples, teasing me. When he does this time, I let my head fall back, feeling the pleasure build inside of me. The smallest touches bring the largest thrills. He tortures me like this. He has for weeks. At one point, it did feel like suffering, but I crave it now, every piece of it. I only feel lust when I think about being at his mercy. I love you naked on this bench. Jace's deep voice is so low, I barely hear him. But I feel his warm breath along my belly as he moves his tongue to right where the blade has just been. He does this first every time, teasing me with the knife, shaving any trace of hair before moving on. He always takes his time, and part of me thinks it's because he doesn't want this to end either. Once the flames have all flickered out and the darkness sets in, and the loud click of the lock in the barren room signals it's over, that's when reality comes rushing back. The war, the drugs, all of the lies that leave a tangled web for me to get lost in. I don't want any of it. I want to swallow, the need is there, but I know to wait until the blade is lifted, leaving me cold and begging for it back on my skin, teasing me. It's only once he pulls it back that I dare to swallow the lump in my throat and turn my head on the thick wooden bench to look at him. Jace Croft, my enemy and yet the only person I trust. Fear used to consume me in these moments, but as the rough rope digs into my wrist, not an ounce of it exists. His dark eyes flicker, mirroring the flames of the fireplace lining the back wall of the room. My gaze lingers as he swallows too, highlighting the stubble that travels from his throat to his sharp jawline. That dip in his neck begs me to kiss him, right there, right in that dip as if he's vulnerable there. With broad shoulders and a smoldering look in his eyes, Jace is a man born to be powerful. His muscles rippling in the fire's light as he looks down at me forces my heart to flicker as well. The gold flecks in his iris spark and I'm lost in a trance, so much so that I freely admit what I've never said before. I love it too. I swear I see the hint of a smile tugging the corner of his lips up, but it's gone before I'm certain. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have given him more power than he already has. Jace Cross will be my downfall.
Dun, dun,
nice.
Dun.
Steamy. I was getting all steamed over, I have to say.
Yeah, it's definitely a steamy book. It's actually something that not a lot of people write about, but fire play. That's a lot of people think that it's knife play, given that he uses a knife on her in the prologue, but it's actually preparing for fire play. Really intense to write and a lot of fun to write and very different from my normal.
Yeah. Did you have to research fire play? I don't know a whole lot of it.
There's not a lot of videos about fire play on like Pornhub and porn sites. It's very limited. And there aren't actually a lot of guides online either, because there are, there are so many consent forms like, and do not try this at home and you can get hurt from this and that type of thing. I read a book years and years ago called Under His Command, and I read it. It was the first book I immediately read after 50 Shades of Grey, actually, and I've talked to the author on Facebook before. I was, like, shocked to see her on Facebook, and I absolutely loved it, and she has a warning in the beginning of her book, too, but she went over it in her book in detail. He's a fireman. They were married. But separated, and he wanted one last chance with her, and he had never shared, his desire for that before. So it was a really, really good read, and it got me interested in it, and I've never written fire play before, and I'm always trying to up the ante with my books. And Jace is a very dangerous guy, so I wanted I wanted a lot of danger in every aspect.
I like that. Yeah, and I did think it was a nice play, you know, because of the prologue. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I read Hellbound put together an anthology, I don't know, was it last year, James, the Depraved Desires? And one of the submissions.
Oh, that was our first that. Year that came
yeah.
out. Yeah.
Yeah, and it seemed like it was one of the submissions was knife play, and
mm-hmm.
I read it and I was like, "Wow, this is good." And I was so on edge the entire time because you know it's a horror, you know we're a horror, you know, company, and I thought for sure you know it's going to end in you know carnage and blood and death, and it didn't. But the whole time I was just waiting for him to like you know plunge the knife, and you know it was just knife play.
Yeah.
And I have to admit it was so sexy. I was like, wow. I might
it's
have to
surprising
give that a try
sometimes.
So you went and got raided the knife drawer. And
yeah.
I was like, you
yeah,
know,
I remember I when I read. I know you guys know Jade West, and I remember when I read her her Dirty Wrong books. Dirty Bad series, and it was Dirty Bad Wrong. I hope that I'm saying these right. Oh, my gosh. I love them, but I remember reading a section, and I thought, what did I just read, and why am I so horny? Like, it was...
nice.
He can write, yeah. And that's what I aim for in a few of these scenes. There are two that I think are very memorable in the entire series. One, that is their first sex scene in the books, and then another that I wrote in the third book that I think is very memorable, and also it has that same thing where you're holding your breath because
mm-hmm.
like it's something new that you haven't experienced, and it's something that has danger as a very critical piece of what's going on, and you can't help but to feel the danger and the fear of what could happen if things go wrong. So I'm really I'm really happy with it though. I felt like it was good to push that boundary and make those memorable. Yeah.
I was just thinking when you were saying something. Have you read the Pepper Winters Monsters in the Dark series?
That would be Tears of Tess and
yes,
Quintessential
yes,
Sue.
Yes,
I have.
Yep.
Yes, I have.
There was
yes.
a scene, I don't remember which one it was in, where, you know, they get done with, you know, whatever, and they're, you know, they're in a puddle of blood, sweat, and semen. And I remember thinking,
ew.
Yeah.
Ew. You can't say that.
No.
You can't say that on a family show. Ew.
Is this a family show?
I mean,
when did that happen?
Well, moving on. You don't even know. You can't say no.
It was such an intense scene, and you know, your first thought is kind of ew, but as, you know, reading it in you know the things that happened, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, wow, that was. I can breathe normally now. Finally, you know.
Yeah. She has a lot of really intense scenes, that very memorable scenes. People still talk about those books and still post. I'm in her Facebook fan group, and people always like, you can't help but love Q.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, my daughter actually bought me a necklace that is a bird in a bird cage, and that's the. I mean, she thought I really just loved bird cages or whatever, but I was like, no, it was for Q and Tess. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was great. So.
I saw a meme today. I don't know how I connected it, but it was like when I decide to share some of my dark books with my friends, and the response is, "Oh my God, what is wrong with you?" If you were to tell her, I guess, about your, "Oh no, I don't really like birds in cages. It's about this book. Here, read it." Like.
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
Some people just don't get it. Yeah.
No, And that's fine. That's fine. It's not for everybody.
Exactly. It's not. But I really like the darker books, like, you know, Pepper Winters and C.J. Roberts, where, you know, you almost don't have any hope. Like, they take you to a level where, like, you don't see how it's going to be okay. And yet, love still conquers. And it's still, you know... you still get that happily ever after and they made it through it. So I think that's why I like the darker reads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too, definitely. You know, I had started, and I haven't finished it yet because I never have time to read for pleasure, but I started Pepper Winter's, what's it called, Unseen Messages. And,
oh my gosh, I have that upstairs in my room. It's so big. It's a huge book.
And,
I haven't read it yet, but I've...
You know, I'm such a fan. I'm such a fan of the, that crashed on a, deserted island and stuff. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I just got to, I think, where they're having, problems. So I'm like, I got to get to the good stuff. I can't wait. But so that'll definitely, we should buddy read together, when either one of us
I
has
would
time
love that.
To read.
Yeah, I have the book upstairs. I met a reader somewhere, and I forget exactly who it was, but she said that she had a copy, and she thought I would love it, and she mailed it to me, which was so sweet. And so I have it upstairs in paperback form, but I just joined a book club, and we read a mm-hmm. book a month for that, and I'm learning that my limit is right around a book a month for pleasure reading.
Yeah.
But I should make more time. I have to make more time for pleasure reading because I'm reminded mm-hmm. how much I do love it. When I do take the time and read them. Yeah. Yeah. But I would love to buddy read that.
Definitely.
Sure that done. Yeah.
Exactly. Accountability. It's a real thing.
Yeah. I write faster and more consistently when I have a writing buddy. And it's that exact thing. The accountability really motivates you.
It does. It does, because otherwise, but then again, when you write for a living publishing and we're reading, submissions and editing and so I really, there's no time for pleasure reading, after I get done mm-hmm. Day working, I'm like, I already read, it's almost like work now,
Yeah,
but
exactly. And the to-do list is only ever getting longer. It never seems to go away and be happy. It's just, there's always something that needs to be done.
Definitely.
I do love it, though. Yeah. Sometimes I love my to-do list.
I hate to say this, but it's time for our show to end. It's gone by way too fast.
My goodness, it did. It went by so fast. But I'm so happy that you guys have me on to chit-chat. And, thank you. This is fun.
No, it's been fun. It's been fun. Thank you.
I can't.
We need to extend the show because we don't have enough time. We do not.
Every week it seems like we run out. Yeah. But we definitely have to have you back, Willow, because you read the best excerpts. There's so many times that some of the authors, especially the ones that read the steamy ones, they kind of shy away from the steamy scenes. And, no, I want the, give us the, give it all to us. So
we want the filth. We want the filth.
Yeah,
we really do.
And I am here for that. I live for that.
Brilliant.
So non-embarrassed,
I don't
have
shame. Thing and call it Filth Corner. I mean, we could just have,
Willow
on each week to read a snuffy bit from one of the books. That'd be brilliant. I would love that.
Yes, some good excerpts. And I could definitely have some favorite books with some little dirty bits, too, that would be enjoyable.
It sounds like fun. We definitely have you on really soon. And thank you
absolutely.
So much, Willow.
Thank you, guys.
It's been absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll speak to you again very soon.
Thank you. I'll talk to you guys later.
And you. Bye-bye. And I'm afraid, Xtina, it's time we have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Good night. Blue jeans, baby, with your big blue eyes. Don't want you looking at other guys. Got to make you give me one more chance. I can't keep still, so baby, let's dance. Well, the blue jean bop is the bop for me. Well, it's the bop, it's the dungaree. You dip your hip, free your knee, clear on your heel, baby, 1, 2, 3. Well, blue jean bob, blue jean bob, baby, blue jean bob, blue jean bob, baby, blue jean bob, baby, won't you?
your Bible G. Bop, yeah, bop. Well, my heart starts a-hopping like a kangaroo. My feet do things I've never done before. Well, blue jean, baby, give me more, more, more. Well, blue jean bob, baby, blue jean bob. Blue jean bob, baby, blue jean bob. Baby, won't you bob the jean? Rock it again, blue cat, go! Baby, won't you buy the jeans?
Blue cap, buy the jeans now, let's go!
A blue jeans, a blue jeans, buy. A blue jeans, a blue jeans, buy, baby. A blue jeans, a blue jeans, buy. A blue jeans, a blue jeans, buy. A blue jeans, a baby, won't you buy the jeans?